Welcome to Let's Do It Radio, sponsored by and found on the homepage of doitallinthemall.com. If this is your first time listening, welcome. We want you to feel welcome as we go through the journey of keeping history alive. Today is Tuesday, June 8, 2021. This is your hostess, Miss Inez, CEO and fashion designer of Inez Elko Designs, broadcasting to you worldwide, all the way to China, to Russia, to Australia, to Italy, to Portugal, to France, to Africa, to Mexico, to everywhere. And so we want to welcome our guest speaker, Miss Janet Schwartz, out of Indiana, on the topic of education for those who seek. You can visit Ms. Schwartz in the client section of the homepage of Do It All in the Mall while listening to any of the shows on demand where all of the entrepreneurs can be found on Let's Do It Radio. So please join the conversation on Skype during today's show, or you can call in to 845-241-9985. Do It All in the Mall is owned and operated by Sharon Salisbury Frazier and has been in business for over 13 years and is a safe and secure 24/7 online shopping mall of over 5,000 stores for all your needs. You can shop while listening to entertainment, all in the comfort of your comfort zone. Wherever your comfort zone is your home, in a car, traveling, wherever you are, you can make a difference, not only nationwide, but worldwide. So please visit, take a tour, and shop. As we go through today, we are so thankful for Miss Janet, and we're going to do the rights.
We do not own the rights to any information or music you hear at Let's Do It Radio.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Mr. Voice for the rights. All right.
I want to be a billionaire so freaking bad. Buy all of the things I never had. I want to be on the cover of Forbes magazine, smiling next to Oprah and the Queen. Oh, every time I close my eyes, I see my name in shiny lights, yeah, a different city every night. Oh, I swear, the world better prepare for when I'm a billionaire.
Yeah, I would have a show like Oprah. I would be the host of Everyday Christmas. Give Trappy a wish list. I'd probably pull an Angelina and Brad Pitt and adopt a bunch of babies that ain't never had. Give away a few Mercedes like, here, lady, have this. And last but not least, rant about it last week. It's been a couple months that I've been in gold, so you can call me Travis Claus, modest a ho-ho. Get it? I probably visit with Katrina here and sure do a lot more than FEMA did. Yeah, can't forget about me, stupid. Everywhere I go, I might have my own theme music.
Oh, every time I close my eyes,
what you see, bro?
I see my name in shiny lights.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What else?
A different city every night. Oh,
yeah. Basketball with the president, dunking on his delegates. Then I compliment him on his political etiquette. Toss a couple million in the air just for the heck of it. But keep the 520 tins and bins completely separate. Yeah, I'd be in a whole new tax bracket. We in recession, but let me take a crack at it. I'd probably take whatever's left and just split it up, so everybody that I love can have a couple bucks. And not a single tummy around me would know what hungry was, eating good, sleeping soundly. I know we all have a similar dream. Go in your pocket, pull out your wallet, put it in the air and sing.
I wanna be a billionaire so freaking bad. Buy all of the things I never had.
Everything.
I wanna be on the cover of Forbes magazine, smiling next to Oprah and the Queen.
What up, Oprah?
Oh, every time I close my eyes,
he wants to be a billionaire. I bet long time ago they didn't even know about Forbes and everything else. But education for those who seek is what we're going to be speaking about today. And that last song was Billionaire by Bruno Mars. And as we bring in our teacher, Miss Janice Schwartz of Indiana, on the topic of education for those who speak, she will take us on a journey of some of the pioneers who made Black lives better, who made a lot of things better for us. So you can chime in to this topic by calling in or Skyping at 845-241-9985. And school is now. In session as we bring in Miss Janet. Hello, Miss Janet. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
Good.
Thank you for that great introduction.
Of course, of course. You should have even a more better, a more better, M-O-B-E-T-T-A-H.
More better.
Introduction is more better, yes, ma'am. Because you bring it
blues.
And you bring education, you bring all kinds of stuff to us. And I'm just so glad that you are here and are going talk to us about a few good people. Madam C.J. Walker, Bertner Woodson Tandy, Mary McLeod Bethune, Lucy Craft Laney, and Charlotte Hawkins Brown, and also the Alpha Phi Alpha Founders Day tribute. So I want to play this real short clip on Madam C.J. Walker's children music, Black Women Who Changed the World, and then we will be back with none other than the Miss Janet Schwartz as you are now, school is in session.
Madam C.J. Walker became a millionaire. She made the Walker system that helped to care for her. She made a lot of money and gave a lot away, doing her part to make the world a better place. You may have a vision. That can change the world. It could be your mission. You can be a boy or a girl. You don't need a lot of money.
No, you don't.
Just passion in your heart. C.J. Walker left a legacy. It's not about the money, but how to be free. Follow your passions and live out your dream. No matter where you come from, work hard and you will see.
Ms. Inez, are you there?
I am here. I'm just talking away, and I had it on mute because I had to turn the TV down the back.
Oh.
So, Ms. Janet, thank you. Because I had the TV going on in the background. Like, oh, my goodness, let me turn that down so we can hear what Ms. Janet has to say. So thank you for bringing us in. And let's go ahead and just, how are you doing?
I'm doing just great. Weather's rainy and humid, but hey, I love it. It makes things grow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. It certainly does. Mm-hmm. It's rather warm here where I am as well. It's just too hot. Talk about climate change. It's just climate's haven't changed. It just got hotter.
Yeah.
They have just gotten hotter, Sue. But no, it's all good. So you want to go ahead and get into who we're speaking about all day today?
Sure. Yeah. Education for those who seek.
Yes.
The clips we're going to listen to are about Madam C.J. Walker. And the first one is called Meet the Self-Made Female Millionaire. And I love the second clip because they interview Madam C.J. Walker's great-granddaughter.
Great-great-granddaughter.
And her name is... Well, actually, she's the great-granddaughter. I double-checked that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So her name's Alelia Bundles is her name. And she's the one who wrote the book called Self-Made that was made into a movie with Octavia, and I forget her last name, but...
Spencer.
All right, so, sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
So, let's go ahead and listen to the two clips.
All right, first one is Meet the First Self-Made Female Millionaire.
The cosmetics industry is worth $62 billion a year in the U.S. alone. But few people know the incredible true story of one of its pioneers. A child of slaves who becomes the first female African-American millionaire. But that fortune is a long way off in 1887. An uneducated single parent, Sarah keeps a roof over their heads by taking in other people's washing.
There was no indoor plumbing. There was no electricity. People really didn't bathe very often.
Exhaustion and the unhygienic conditions soon take its toll on Sarah.
Within a few years, her hair began to fall out. She had really horrible scalp disease, really horrible dandruff because she wasn't cleaning her scalp regularly.
In her role as a washerwoman, Sarah has come into contact with many types of cleansing agents. So she starts mixing them, hoping to find a cure for her hair loss.
So what she did was to experiment with an ointment that had petrolatum, which is like Vaseline. It had sulfur, which healed the sores on her scalp. And she put a little perfume in it so it wouldn't smell so bad.
When she applies it, something incredible happens. Her hair begins to grow back.
She became her own walking advertisement. And when other women saw what had happened with her and they saw that now she had hair, then they wanted to know what she was using.
Using the small amount of money she saved, she starts bottling and selling her lotion.
She began to travel throughout the southern United States and the eastern United States, mostly to the towns and cities where there was a church. She was going after African-American women. And because they were urban, they were beginning to care more about their clothing and about their presentation. She knew that this market was untapped. She would go to their houses and say, I'll be happy to do a treatment for you for free if you buy the product from me for 10 cents.
It's a winning strategy.
Huh.
Soon, C.J. Walker has a team of saleswomen going door to door.
The Wonderful Hair Grower was the top seller because women thought it would grow their hair. Well, really what it would do was heal their scalp so their hair would grow.
By 1910, C.J. Walker has a growing business. For the first time, she and her daughter can enjoy luxuries. And she has a vision of what she must do next. Racism in America is still rife. Between 1900 and 1914, hundreds of African Americans are murdered. So C.J. Walker decides to use her wealth to bankroll change.
She became very involved in the NAACP. She would meet with the leadership of the NAACP, and they would talk to her about their anti-lynching campaign. They would talk to her about voting rights and the kinds of things that they were interested in. And so she began to see herself on a larger stage.
Her fortune pays for campaigns and provides scholarships for promising African American students.
She was a woman who had used her money to try to make a difference in the world.
In 1919, Madam Walker dies suddenly from kidney failure. She's 51. She leaves a fortune of over $1 million and a sales force of over 20,000 agents, generating revenues equivalent to tens of millions of dollars today.
When Madam Walker died, it was almost as if the reaction to Mandela. People lined up all along Broadway in Irvington, New York, just to get a glimpse of the casket.
First made, self-made female millionaire. The next one is the great granddaughter, as Miss Janet says, shares little told story of her activism. Here we go.
As a journalist and author of your great-grandmother's seminal biography, you certainly are taking on the legacy of Madam C.J. Walker. So how and why did you decide to take on this responsibility?
This is a 50-year journey, and I will tell you, as I was growing up, the last thing I thought I would have been doing is telling Madam Walker's story. My mother was vice president of the Madam C.J. Walker Manufacturing Company, and my real passion was writing, and my parents encouraged me to write and to become a journalist. But I was surrounded by these things that had belonged to the Walker women when I was growing up. Madam Walker's silverware we used every day had CJW, her monogram, on it. The china that we used on special occasions had belonged to her. So 50 years ago, when I was a senior in high school, I wrote my first paper, but it was about Alelia Walker and the Harlem Renaissance and her life in Harlem. And then when I was in graduate school at Columbia in journalism, Phyllis Garland, my advisor, insisted that I write my paper about Madam Walker and Alelia Walker. But she's the one who said, I recognize your name. I wasn't saying anything about Madam Walker. But that validated the story for me at a time when very few people really were clamoring at my door. Nobody was clamoring at my door to write about Madam Walker. But that's led to four books. I think the time is right. This story that had been bouncing around Hollywood for a long time finally got the advocates that it needed.
And what would you say is the greatest message here in the story? And I know it's difficult to pinpoint one.
Right. Well, I think when you write a book that has 250 plus pages and 20 years worth of research, only a teeny bit of that will end up in a four-part series. But I think Octavia Spencer is so powerful in this role. And you can see the courage of Madam Walker. You can see the arc of her life from starting out as a washerwoman and really feeling that she was at the bottom of society and transforming herself into a woman who became a millionaire, who empowered other women, but who also used that money and that influence as a philanthropist, as a political activist, as a patron of the arts. I mean, some of the things that don't come through as much is the generational wealth that she created for black families. What is her political activism on the level of holding a convention in 1917, 2 years before Mary Kay was born, and giving prizes not just to the women who sold the most products, but to those who contributed the most to charity. And then at the end of the convention, sending a telegram to President Woodrow Wilson, urging him to support legislation to make lynching a federal crime. And that translates even past that decade with women who were beauticians helping to pay for the buses that took people to the March on Washington in 1963. So that activism is a very little told story of Madam Walker's life. She knew when she was creating hair care products that women needed some solution for the infections, the scalp infections, but she knew they needed even more education and financial independence.
Yes, ma'am. And yeah, I guess you could also consider her a self-made scientist as well for creating all the things that she had created, as well as an inventor.
Yeah, and it's good that she put perfume in that mixture that she made, because if it's made of sulfur, you know what sulfur smells like.
Ugh.
It smells like rotten eggs.
Well, when you say that, because we used to, there's this product called Sulfurate, and we used to put that in our hair. That's what we used to have, what we would put in our hair. So, I mean, I don't know what they did. Maybe they did kind of, you know, demure the smell. But, I mean, you knew when you had some Sulfurate in your hair because you could smell it. But it wasn't as potent as Sulfurate, you know, that the regular Sulfurate was. But there is. You look it up, and it's called Sulfurate.
Yeah.
You used to put that on the hair for that reason. It would just feel like a mentholatum, petrolatum, as she says, on your scalp. And it was just like a tingling. And the same thing with tea tree oil and everything else. So, and then do you know all the products that she created? You know, she did, the straightening comb, the curling knot, all that kind of stuff. It's like, wow, the things she created, you know, so it's like, just, you know, they call it the pomade, and that pomade was thick. It was almost like Vaseline, you know, and we, to this day, I think I even have some from my mom and dad. I brought it home with me because you don't see a lot of that stuff anymore. You don't, you really, really don't see that stuff anymore as far as in the store. There is some, but, you know, not as prominent. They have the Jamaican oils, and they have other things, but a lot of things are more soluble now, and they have a lot argan oils, more oils than they have, like pomades, because the pomades are so thick and be greasy. You put a bonnet on your head, that bonnet would be all greased up by the time you wake up in the morning from heat and sweat and everything else. So I mean, we've come a long way from, you know, from Miss Madam C.J. Walker and her inventions. But it's like, you know, thanks to her and her inventions and what she went through for us to be where we are now. I just really, really, really appreciate, you know, her talents and everything. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, if you put pomade in your hair.
Go ahead.
Oh, I saw the movie Self-Made with Octavia Spencer. Yes, it's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix now.
It's still there. I mean, whoever's listening out there, it's still on Netflix, so you can still have the opportunity to see it. It's an excellent movie. Excellent. I loved it.
I guess I'm going to have to.
Yeah.
I'll have to see it. Thank you. I'll go and look at that. Because, I mean, I love Octavia Spencer anyway. She's just a wonderful actress in herself.
Oh, yeah, she is.
You know.
Yeah,
and I don't
think
she gets her just due. Yeah, I don't think she gets her just due. I don't think, what's the other one? Viola Davis, she doesn't get her just due.
Oh,
she don't get their just due. But, you know, it is what it is. We're just going to have to change that.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to have to change that. But no, as Ms. Janet said, Self-Made is out there on Netflix, and it may be on some other movie channels as well. But let's take a look at Self-Made and see Ms. Madam C.J. Walker as a self-made, first self-made female millionaire. So, And then... then who came along? Mary Kay and then Avon and everybody else. So
Thank you to the women who came after her, and thank you to the women who came before her, and thank you to the women who came during her. So
yeah, all those women.
So, teacher, what's our next class?
We're going to look at the guy who made Madam C.J. Walker's, designed her house, and his name is Vertner Woodson Tandy. And he, you know, he's a little known architect, yet he accomplished a lot. So I think it's interesting the clips that we're going to hear and what they bring out in Vertner Woodson Tandy.
Okay.
Yeah, what he accomplished.
So do you want me to play each one and we talk, or do you want me to play them all and then we talk?
Let's play them all and then we'll talk.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
You said, sure. It's like, okay.
All three.
Born here in 1885, Vertner Woodson Tandy is one of Lexington's most notable sons. His father, Henry Tandy, was instrumental in the construction of Lexington's historic courthouse. As a youth, Vertner went to the Chandler Normal School on Georgetown Road. Tandy attended the Tuskegee Institute, where he was mentored by Booker T. Washington and was considered a prize architecture student. In 1905, he transferred to Cornell University. While at Cornell, Tandy and six other young African-American men formed the first-ever black fraternity, Alpha Pi Alpha. Tandy even designed the fraternity pin. After graduation, Tandy became the first registered African-American architect in New York State. His office was located on Broadway in New York City. He designed many notable structures. Among those are St. Philip's Episcopal Church, the Ivy Apartments, and his most famous work, the Mansion of Harlem Millionaire, Madam C.J. Walker. Tandy eventually returned to Lexington and designed the addition to the Chandler School, known as Webster Hall, to house the school's teachers. Perhaps most notably, Vertner Tandy was the first black man to receive a U.S. military commission, becoming the first African American to pass the commission exam. He served as a first lieutenant in the 15th Infantry of New York's National Guard during World War I.
How many firsts do we have? Let's go to the next one. The next one is called An Architectural Jewel, Vertner Woodson Tandy.
He was one of the seven jewels, or founding fathers, of Alpha Phi Alpha. He was the first treasurer of the frat. Under his guidance, it became incorporated. He was the first black person to pass a military commissioning exam and the first black registered architect in the state of New York. Vertner Woodson Tandy was born on May 17th of 1885 in Lexington, Kentucky. As a boy, he learned carpentry from his father, Henry, who was a highly skilled, highly respected master builder. Vertner attended Tuskegee University for a short while, where he was mentored by Booker T. Washington. He was awarded Prize Student of the Year in Architecture. In 1905, he transferred to Cornell University, where he would make history as being one of the founding patriarchs of A5A. After graduation, he began his practice. He designed the St. Philip's Episcopal Church in New York. Perhaps the crown of his jewel is the 34-room, 20,000-square-foot mansion at Villa Loraro, the home of Madame C.J. Walker. The breathtaking Italian Renaissance architecture leaves one speechless at every turn. It is rightly preserved as one of the historic sites of New York State.
Wow. What size was that house? We'll come back and talk about that. The next one is Alpha Phi Alpha Founders Day Tribute.
Alpha Phi Alpha is the first African-American intercollegiate Greek-lettered fraternity in the world. It was founded on December 4, 1906 at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Our founders are known as the Seven Jewels.
I told my mama just the other day that I was gonna pledge A5A. She said, boy, don't you move too fast. You know the mouth was gonna kick your ass. Oh, Alpha. Oh, Alpha. Oh, Alpha. Deep in my heart, Iota Delta. Iota Delta. Iota Delta. Deep in my heart.
To be an alpha man means more than just to wear a pin. It requires intrinsic qualities that are developed deep within. It calls for lasting brotherhood, a word sometimes used in vain. It means an honest devotion, not anticipation of personal gain. Fraternity speaks of brotherly love. That's something to achieve. It's more than just a grip of hands. It's an ideal to conceive. You're proud to be an alpha and share her praises one. Before you inflate yourself with pride, ask yourself honestly, how much have I done? To realize the wealth of personal satisfaction from knowing you've given your all, to have helped her cause unfalteringly when you rally to her call. To combine all these qualities and root them deep within, the product would be an alpha man deserving of his pin. So take an honest inventory of your character within, and for every virtue you find missing, try and weave it in. For a man without these virtues isn't worth a grain of sand. It's plain to see. It's more than just a pin that makes an alpha man.
Interesting. Before we talk about this, I didn't know Madam C.J. Walker's name was, what was it called? Sarah Breedlove.
Sarah?
She was born
either.
Sarah Breedlove. I'm looking at it. I did not know that. I don't know what the C. Dot Day Dot Walker, you know, the CJ stands for. So, you know me, I'm going to have to do some other things. But she was Sarah Breedlove because I heard them talk about Sarah. It's like, who is Sarah? And then they talked about Sarah Kettler. I don't know if that's who had spoken about what I'm looking at, but I just was like, okay, Miss Sarah. There's some other information that you and I didn't know about. So I just wanted to bring that out. But what made me go back to her was the size of the house that this man had built for her. Oh, my goodness. How big was it?
Yeah.
Huge. It was
huge.
And
there's pictures of it, too, that show you.
I gotta
go
look and see these things.
The
magnitudes of the house
just show. Oh my gosh, yeah, it's like you said, it's huge. It's a mansion, and there's a famous picture. I'm sorry, what did you say?
No, I said.
Oh,
just the mansion.
Yeah, there's a picture of her in front of the mansion and all of her sales reps there in front of the mansion also, and a couple hundred sales reps right there, and they're on the part of the steps and down front in the yard, and they picture the mansion in Self-Made, the movie with Octavia Spencer. You get to see a glimpse of what it was like. So Vertner Woodson Tandy designed her mansion. That's that's his most famous thing that he, as an architecture, drew up. And he also designed what's called the Ivy Delft Apartments. And in 2005, that got listed on the National Register of Historic Places. So Vertner Woodson Tandy, he's pretty famous. His father was born a slave, and his father's firm was called Tandy and Bird, and they designed the Lexington, Kentucky Opera House. So he came from first a family of slaves and also of architects. So he had a good
That's a good start. Good start at life here. And I like the fact that he started the first black fraternity at Cornell. Alpha Phi Alpha.
Yeah. Alpha Phi Alpha. That's definitely,
and
yes,
he's called,
yes.
One, yeah, he's called one of the founding jewels.
Yes. And are we going to talk about the jewels?
Well, it was himself and six other men. Those are the seven founding jewels of Alpha Phi Alpha that founded the fraternity. So it's pretty interesting. And I like that song, Alpha Man, that was played.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Seven. I'm trying to find, you know me and my Googling.
Yeah, Google away.
Well, you know me, the seven jewels. Okay. Because I thought we had some information on the seven jewels, but I guess not. But it was Henry Arthur Callas, Charles Henry Chapman, Eugene Kinkle Jones, George Biddle Kelly, Nathaniel Allison Murray, Robert Harold Ogle, and Bertner Woodson Tandy. Yes.
And he designed, Tandy designed that pin that is the pin, the official pin of Alpha Phi Alpha.
That's beautiful, if that's what I'm looking at. That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That is just beautiful. Seven jewels. Yeah. Just think, if these people hadn't come about, where would we be today? Answer me that question. Where would we be today? And their 96th General Convention is in Indianapolis.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's July the page changed. July the 10th through the 18th or something like the 13th through the 18th of this year. So, and their colors are black
really?
And gold is what it looks like. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
So
wow.
Maybe you can find you an alpha man.
Yeah.
The alpha man.
Find me an alpha
funny.
Man.
But yeah, their convention is in July. July 13th through 18th
wow.
in Indianapolis at the General Convention of 96. Yes, ma'am. Countdown, 34 okay. days, 5 hours, 22 minutes, and 13 seconds and counting. That's interesting.
Mm.
Thank you. That is so
sure.
interesting.
It is. Everybody should know about this.
Yes, and we do have a couple of listeners. One of them I know likes to just hang out and listen, but I'm going to bring in with the last four of 2968 and tell us where you're calling from and who you are.
Hey, guys. How you doing? This is Way Busy. I'm from California, a.k.a. Way Busy, but my name is Craig. How you doing?
Craig.
Good.
Hey,
glad you called
I'm doing
in.
Good in yourself?
You know, I can't complain. You know, when you're doing better than most, worse than a few, I don't think you can complain about much.
And you've called into
like
the show
that.
Before, have you not?
You know, I've called into the show before and I had a wonderful time. I thought I'd give a call again and see what happens.
Thank you. And today we are talking about education for those who seek. And Miss Janet is our spokesperson, speaker, teacher, as I call her. And we're talking about Madam C.J. Walker, Bertner Woodson Tandy, who we just got you talking about, who was the founder of, one of the founders of Alpha Phi Alpha, and Mary McLeod Bethune, Lucy Craft Laney, and Charlotte Hawkins Brown. So that's what we're talking about today. And we're so glad that you joined us. Thank you so much, Craig, for joining us.
Yeah.
It's good to hear
you. Thank you.
So good to hear from you. Yeah, so how are you doing today?
Like I said, I'm doing better than most, worse than a few. I can't complain. And I'm just thinking how amazing it is to be able to, let me just say this real clear, walk in love. And the love that I'm walking in looks past what people can see looking out their two eyeballs. It looks past that. It looks into the spiritual realm. And when you're looking in the spiritual realm at the person who's in the natural, you have supernatural abilities to get down with it like nobody's business. You know what I'm saying? And so I like to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you like to delve into somebody's soul. You like to go deep.
Yeah, because if we don't go deep, we ain't getting down to the root of the problem. And we got to be, you know what I'm saying, we got to be the people that we are. And some of us are epistemologists, mm-hmm. like myself, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
She said, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
I like,
man,
I
but
like
you know what
Craig.
I'm saying, though. You know what I'm saying, though. You know what I'm saying. You know, I'm just saying,
I understand.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. That's all. Yeah, okay, it ain't got nothing to do with
nobody yeah.
mocking nobody and none of that stuff. We ain't trying to mock nobody. We ain't do it like that. We don't do it like that.
No, there's more. Uh-huh. We try not to be that
No,
way.
Because we got to keep it real. If we don't keep it real, then how are our own people going to be able to understand what's going on? If our own people don't understand what you're saying, then you got problems and they be multiplying. Sometimes it be electrifying.
Right. We just, that is
yeah,
correct,
so
Craig.
We got to
you
be sharp. Yeah, we got to be sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And
Thank
so
you.
When it comes to love, like if I was mm-hmm. looking for a lady, which I don't have to look for no lady because that's the wrong way. I'll end up in the psychiatrist's hospital and stuff and talking to somebody laying on the couch. No, it's
wow.
not like that.
Okay.
It's all about the women that are looking for the prize, and the man is the prize. And if you got it like that, then you got it all right. You know what I'm saying? There ain't nothing wrong with that. You know what I mean? But, hey, you know, some people
going
to be reflecting
right.
what I'm projecting, and a lot of people are going to be like, nah, I don't believe you. Well, that's your problem, not mine, sucker.
Okay. Did you hear the clips at all that were played on Mr. Burtner, Woods, and Tandy?
You know what? I must have missed that part. I wish I would have heard it because then I might have had something to say. But it sounds like the gentleman
That's
has
okay.
a lot to offer, you know.
Oh, he did. He
yeah.
offered quite a bit. He offered
yeah.
quite a bit. Quite a bit. Mm-hmm.
That's
you've heard
what
of
Madam
C.J.
You know?
Walker, right? Mm-hmm.
I'm going to learn something today, it sounds like.
You're going to learn mm-hmm. today, bruh.
Do
you have anything else to say? You have anything else
well,
to say, Ms. Janet?
It depends on what we're talking about.
I've been to the Madam Walker Theater in Indianapolis.
Okay.
At the time, our church was renting space from there to have our Sunday services. So,
oh, wow.
It's
okay.
a beautiful
okay.
place. It's beautiful. Very historic.
Mm.
So that's all I wanted to add is that there's in Indianapolis is the Madam C.J. Walker Theater.
Okay.
Wow.
Now,
historic.
Is she from Indianapolis?
No. I think that's where she
okay.
ultimately settled.
Okay. Because I didn't know mm-hmm. if the mansion was there as well.
No, not that I know of.
Okay. The mansion is yep. massive, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Craig.
I called the wrong program, you guys.
Wow.
I called the wrong program.
That's fine.
I called the wrong program. I thought I was calling this other program, and I'm thinking, dude, you're messing up bad today.
But no, you're fine.
Oh.
No, it's always
How
a pleasure to have you join us, you know, to learn a few things about some of our pioneers and some of our self-made millionaires and some architects
Woo.
And some carpenters and what have you. So you never is never, you know, you can never learn too much. Knowledge is power,
yeah.
and the more power you have, the more knowledge you have, the more power you have. And you can go out into the world and just, you know, be creative and say, hey, did you know that this person did this and that this person did that? So once you get through with our keeping history alive, you'll learn a lot, Mr. Craig.
Yeah. And that's what I am. That's what I am because I had a contact with this brother, Packer. I think it was. I'm trying to remember what the date it was. I have a hard time with dates and numbers and stuff for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I believe it was in 1993 or 94. I believe I was cruising around
mm-hmm.
with this brother. His name was Geronimo Pratt. You know who Geronimo Pratt is? Me and him were kicking it in the
You
sunshine.
Told me about him. We talked about him before.
Yeah,
we talked about him before. You mentioned him.
Yeah, homeboy was dropping some nuggets. He was dropping nuggets, you know what I mean? Because
mm-hmm.
he opened up his heart to me and I realized what he was doing. And since he understood since he understood that I was getting what he was saying, he was willing
okay.
to give me a little bit more because the door was open to my heart. So what do you think brother's going to do? He's going to drop some nugs, right? So he was dropping
love into
Way Busy. And Way Busy was getting filled up, and I had no idea that, you know, 20 years or whatever down the road, that it was going to be showing up and Way Busy like this, because this is the beacon of
light.
You know what I'm saying? These people were doing something in the past, and they were just keeping the light on for Way Busy to see what's going on.
Okay, Mr. Way Busy.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
We're going to continue with our show, Craig, and if you want to stay on with us, we appreciate you hanging out with us today, okay?
God bless you. God bless you. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, you're welcome. I'm going to go into, were you finished, Ms. Janet?
Yeah, I was finished with the last clip about Vertner Woodson Tandy. Got to get that out right.
Say that three times fast.
I know.
Well, we're going to go into a couple of commercials, and we will be right back. And then with our next person of interest.
Yeah.
Love lower than low prices? Then get more ways to save at Kroger, where you can find personalized coupons, weekly deals, and rewards like fuel points. All for prices that are lower than low. On food that's fresher than fresh. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
And Kroger can be found in the food and drink section of doitallinthemall.com. And our next commercial is ready for you. I'm hearing the bird in the background. Hey.
Yeah. Tweet, tweet.
Do you feel the black community needs to be guided in a different way and do different things to improve our community ourselves? Then we would love for you to join our team at doitallinthemall.com to help guide our people to shop where they're important and where their money matters to help develop our communities ourselves. Nationwide, we've done it all, and we can do it again. Join us by going to the website, doitallinthemall.com, and fill out a contact form to be a guide in your community. It's free for you to help guide people in your area to shop where they're important and where their money matters. Let's develop our communities ourselves. Doitallinthemall.com.
There you go. And who do we have next on our agenda for class today, Miss Janet?
We have Mary McLeod Bethune, and we're going to listen to two clips about her. The first one is the story of Mary McLeod Bethune, and the second one is her as a civil rights activist. And sorry about the birds in the background. They're quiet all day, and they save it up for when the show comes on. So I apologize to that, but y'all are going to have to put up with the birds.
That's okay. Just don't give me the bird.
Yeah,
just, you'll put up with the bird.
Don't give you the bird, yeah. I'm giving you all the birds. The birds
are
blabbing.
All right, here we go with the story of Mary McLeod.
Mary McLeod. Okay.
When Mary McLeod Bethune started a school for girls in 1904 with $1.50 and 5 students, it would have been hard for her to imagine what it would become. Today, Bethune-Cookman University sits on 85 acres in Daytona Beach, boasting an endowment of nearly $50 million.
It was her dream to have this school to continue, and I think she would be more than happy if she could see that it's still a living and breathing entity and that we're producing scholars and just wonderful, wonderful people that are contributing to society.
From a young age, Bethune seemed destined to be an educator.
Her parents instilled in her a strong work ethic, and they also encouraged her to get her education. Census record shows that she was reading by the time that she was 4 years old.
Bethune moved to Florida in 1899 and settled in Daytona 5 years later. As her school grew, so did the belief in those who backed her.
She had a way of getting people to buy into her dream. And so basically, she contacted the likes of Thomas White, a white sewing machine, and the family that owned Coca-Cola at the time, and different other benefactors that were here. A lot of them wealthy white people that would come to Florida for summer vacation. And they bought into her dream. They encouraged her. They put financial resources and backed her. And now we have Bethune-Cookman University.
Bethune's house, built in the early 1900s, sits on the northeast side of campus. It has been designated a U.S. National Historic Landmark and is open to daily tours.
So this is Doc Bethune's room. Doc Bethune was born July 10, 1875, and she died May 18, 1955 at the age of 79. She was the 15th out of 17 children, and she was the only one in her family that was born with an education. She actually taught herself how to read and write. So here you have a picture of Samuel and Patsy McLeod. That's Doc Bethune's parents. And then below you have the cabin she was born in Maysville, South Carolina on July 10, 1875. So the cabin is through there. It's just a replica. It's not original. You can actually go and visit the cabin.
Situated next to the house is where you'll find Bethune's final resting place. Bethune's solitary grave is open for students and others on campus to walk through. Bethune dedicated her life to education, beating the odds of being an African-American daughter of former slaves at the turn of the 20th century.
Words cannot describe that, and I don't know another woman that was able to do what she did during that time, but she did it.
Yes, sir, she did it. Yes, she did. She did that thing. Miss Mary, all these great women coming through here. Next one is civil rights activist, Mary McLeod Bethune. You know how things don't want to act right. Told you.
Mary McLeod Bethune was an educator and activist who fought for the advancement of Black Americans, especially Black girls, by improving access and quality of education. She was born on July 10, 1875 in Maysville, South Carolina, to former slaves. Her parents were extremely poor. They had 17 children, and all of them worked, most of them picking cotton. But when a missionary started a school for African-American children near her home in Maysville, Bethune decided she wanted to go. She walked 8 miles to school each day by herself, and she came home and tried to teach her family what she learned. She went on to attend the Scotia Seminary for Girls in North Carolina on a scholarship and graduated in 1893. But she was far from finished. She then attended Dwight Moody's Institute for Home and Foreign Missions in Chicago, and after 2 years, moved back down south to work as a teacher and share her knowledge. She worked as a teacher for 10 years and married another teacher, Albertus Bethune, in 1898. They had a son, Albert, but the couple parted in 1907, and in 1918, Albertus died from tuberculosis. Bethune didn't have much money, so she moved to Daytona, Florida, where there was more economic opportunity, and opened the Daytona Normal and Industrial Institute for Negro Girls in 1904. It was a true labor of love. She built the desks and chairs herself. The kids used elderberry juice for ink and burned wood for pencils. The school started small with just 5 girls and Bethune's own son, Albert, but eventually it grew to 250 students. The school eventually merged with a boys' school and was redubbed Bethune-Cookman College. Taking advice from her friend, Booker T. Washington, she courted the wealthy white organizations that had much more access to resources, including money and influence. She had James Gamble of Procter & Gamble sit on the school board of trustees. John D. Rockefeller donated $62,000 to her school. She even developed a friendship with FDR and a very close friendship with Eleanor Roosevelt. And while Bethune was fighting for education for kids, she was also fighting for women's rights. She joined the National Association of Colored Women and served as the president of the Florida chapter from 1917 to 1925. And she did all this while getting threats from members of the Ku Klux Klan. And did she let that stop her? Absolutely not. In 1935, she started the National Council of Negro Women in New York City. In 1938, she hosted the White House Conference on Negro Women and Children. And during World War II, she gained approval for Black women to serve as officers in the Women's Army Corps. She was also a special assistant to the Secretary of War during World War II and served as a member of FDR's Black Cabinet, which was a coalition of black leaders who advised Roosevelt on issues facing the black community. Bethune gave her life to the improvement of others. She advocated for equality of the races and the sexes and went to great lengths to enact change until she died in 1955 at the age of 79.
Yeah. Now, well, do you know who Procter and Gamble were?
Yes.
Oh. You know who Procter and Gamble was?
Yeah.
I didn't know that Procter and Gamble, the eldest son, was the one who created the Ivory soap. I just learned that just now.
Oh, okay.
He said, oh, okay.
So,
but you know how they used to say, I would walk 20 miles one way just to go to school. In
right. Uphill. In
really?
Snow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
With no jacket on.
I know.
But people did.
Yeah.
They, and even to this day, some people will walk 10 miles back and forth to get one way to get to work. because they don't have transportation. But, I mean, you know, it's more not so heard of now, but, you know, as it was when they were young. But she was in school, so no telling who she would encounter on the way to and from school, you know. That's what I'm just amazed
right.
by. I'm surprised she didn't get accosted more by people, you know, on the way to and from school. So I'm just glad
right.
that, you know, things didn't happen to her on that aspect. But man, oh man, she was.
And she was the 15th out of 17 children, and was the
yes.
only one with an education. 15th out of 17. That's
yes.
a big crowd.
Yes. Yes.
In a
yes.
log cabin.
What?
Taught
one room
herself
log
how to
cabin,
read and
probably.
Write. Yeah. Yeah. One room. I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I mean, we don't
mm-hmm.
know, but they've got the replica of it. She said the
oh,
one
they
of
do?
The museum
okay.
curators. Yeah, they have a replica of it, and the drawing of it made it look like there was only one room to it. So
of course
it could be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Was it a log cabin?
Yes, I believe so. Mm-hmm.
It was one room. It
something
was
of that sort. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she courted, she wrote to wealthy white people to get their help financially.
Yes.
And thankfully
yes.
there were quite a few who sent her money that she desperately needed for her school that she started in 1904. Thomas White of the White Sewing Machine Company was one who gave, and I just wanted to mention that I do have a white sewing machine. Do you have any whites in your possession, Ms. Inez?
Oh, yeah, I got a lot of whites in my possession.
Okay. You're so funny. I shouldn't have said it that way.
No, I don't have any white sewing machines in my possession.
Okay. Well, I have a white and a Husqvarna. I have two machines.
I have a brother. Okay. I got brothers.
Okay.
And singers.
You have brothers.
And I have brothers and singers. And I, and what is it? What is the other one? Denome. So I've got different
Denome
machines that people have given me. Is it Denome? I
oh.
call it Denome. I call it like a gnome.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so people have given
wow.
me a sewing machine. So hopefully I'd like to, quote, unquote, open up a school as well so that I can have people, you know, so teach people how to sew and become seamstresses and, you know, as an art. So, but no, I don't have any whites in my
yeah.
house.
No whites at your house.
You had to go
okay.
there, didn't you?
I got whites in my house.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Oh,
you got
gosh.
Plenty O of
I'm,
them.
Plenty O.
You're so wrong. Plenty O.
Plenty O.
You are so wrong. You are so, so wrong.
Now, Mary McLeod,
so
she's rolling in her grave right now, Mary McLeod Bethune.
I know
she's
she
like,
is.
What are those girls
I
talking
know.
About?
I know she's over listening to us. It's like, uh-uh-uh. But no, I was just reading about, you know, some of the people who did give her money. Like I say, Procter & Gamble was some of them. And you say, what was the white man's name?
Thomas. Yeah, Thomas White. Yes, he was a white man. Thomas White.
You're so wrong on so many levels. Thomas White. Okay. Of course, there's a few of them. So did he have a middle initial that you know of?
Not that I know of. Okay. I bet he did. But.
Okay. I'm trying to think. Let me see. Thomas White and what's the woman's name? Mary Bethune. Let me see here. Okay, Thomas H. White. He was I think.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. And dun, 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 dun. Of course, you have to go these large things. Okay, Thomas White, also known as of the White Sewing Machine. In 1913, the chemist James Norris Gamble and Thomas White of White Sewing Machine purchased the home of Bethune. And on December 2nd, 1974, the historic house was added to the U.S. National Register of Historic Places. So he helped her. Yeah. And in 2006, the museum closed for renovation and conservation. It reopened in April of 2011. So, yes, Thomas, I think H. White was who he was. So, wow, we did have people who were, I mean, there were a lot of non-blacks who helped us, you know, through the years. So, I really appreciate, you know, the help of all the people at the foundation, Dr. Thomas.
And that guidance was given.
Yes,
that was told to her by Booker T. Washington. He was the one who said, write to these people and see if they'll give you any money donations for your school. And they sure did. So that was under the instruction of Booker T. Mm-hmm.
And see, that's another thing. Booker T. and all these other, I'll call them founding fathers, gave guidance to those who came after them to help them get to where they are going. So, as I was saying, don't be a crab in the barrel. Reach out and help somebody instead of stepping on somebody and, pushing them down in the barrel. Help them, become somebody. Help other people, along the way, because you'll go further distance. I can't even speak right now. I'm just so excited about all this stuff.
Okay.
But he says, shortly after Mr. White's death, Miss Bethune dedicated a large administrative building, White Hall, in his honor. The school evolved into Bethune-Cookman College. And so now there's also foundations, and they do grants. Mr. White does foundations and he does grants and everything else as well. So I think that is so cool. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. White, for helping Miss Bethune do everything. I'm just so thankful. You just don't understand. You just don't know. You just don't understand. Because, even though we hear about the bad people, we also hear about the good people who helped us and gave us our start. So we have to also give homage to those people. So, without a lot of people helping us through the years, we wouldn't be where we are today. So thank you, Mr. White. Thank you, Mr. Proctor, Mr. Gamble of Procter & Gamble. And thank you for Ivory Soap. Just thank you for everything. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll hear about these other people who are also keeping history alive. So anything else you'd like to say, Miss Janet?
No, that's it. That's it.
Okay. So I'll play a couple of commercials, and then we're going to hear from our next person of interest, as I call them.
Welcome to Do It All in the Mall, an online shopping mall providing over 5,000 stores. We earn a commission when you shop that goes back to your community, making a difference nationwide. Take a tour and shop doitallinthemall.com.
Doitallinthemall.com.
Hey.
Doitallinthemall.com has partnered with over 5,000 of your favorite stores and businesses nationwide, such as Mary Kay, Avon, Amazon, among many others, to help make a positive impact within our communities. Proceeds from purchases made on doitallinthemall.com are funneled back into the community. Afrocentric, apparel, automotive, beauty, home goods, food, drinks, games, gardening, and so much more at doitallinthemall.com. So what are you waiting for? So come on and do all of your shopping right here in the mall at doitallinthemall.com today.
Yeah, man, as we would always say. And who is our next guest of honor, Miss Janet? Teacher?
Well, we have Lucy Craft Laney. She's another one who started a school. And we have two clips that we're listening to. Mm-hmm. One of them about her inspiring people centuries later. And then, the second clip is descendants of her, Lucy Craft Laney. I love it when I can find clips of people that have descended from these famous people. It's great to hear them talk. So those are the two clips. And, you know, if you don't mind, Inez, go ahead and play the two clips.
Let them roll.
We'll talk. Mm-hmm.
Welcome back. As we continue celebrating Black History Month, today we are uncovering a Macon legend named Lucy Craft Laney. Laney educated kids across the state, even opened up a school dedicated to letting African Americans learn.
Well, she did all of this while being a Black woman in the 1800s when all of the odds were stacked against her. Our Wanye Reese spoke to historians and did some research on Laney. He's joining us in studio this morning to share her story. Good morning, Wanye. What'd you learn?
Good Tuesday morning, Aaron and Caitlin. The mother of the children, of the people, those are the words etched onto Lucy Craft Laney's tombstone. From an early age, Laney saw the importance of education, and she made it her life's mission to give that opportunity to African American children.
To go out in the world and be the woman that she has become is truly phenomenal and a wonderful blessing for us here.
One of the common cores that you always hear is about her faith.
Lucy Craft Laney's life began in Macon.
She was born into an enslaved family. Her family was what we call in history going free. They were legally slaves.
Historian Kent Leslie says Laney's father pastored at Washington Avenue Presbyterian Church while her mother worked at the Hay House. A woman there took an interest in Laney.
And so Miss Flora taught her to read and write by the time she was four and taught her Latin by the time she was 12.
It was uncommon at the time for Blacks to be educated. Still, Laney pressed on with her schooling.
It was called Lewis at first and then Ballard. And then Miss Lucy went there and did some teacher training there. But then she got to go to Atlanta University in the first class in 1869.
Laney graduated in 1873 in a class of four teachers. She taught in Augusta, then Savannah, until...
So in 1883, she's called back to Augusta, Reverend Allen, who was working with the Presbyterian Church, to open a school for Black kids.
It started in the church basement.
It's going to be the story of her life. A kid shows up, a kid wants to learn, and she takes them into the school.
Lainey's dedication earned her the respect of many church members who helped fund her own school. She ran the Haynes Normal and Industrial Institute until her death in 1933. But her legacy lives on. Today, Lucy Kraft Lainey Comprehensive High School sits near the location of the school she built.
It gave us a sense of ownership and pride.
Virgil Smith is the principal.
In order to know who you are and where you're going, you have to know where you come from.
From the streets of Augusta to the hills of Macon, the legacy of Lucy Lainey resonates across centuries.
It was so important for her to be about education, for us to learn more than what we've already known.
And it's beautiful because she believed that the power inside the individual was greater than any other power outside of the individual.
Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Now that is absolutely amazing. We're sharing this story to not only educate you about Lainey, but invite you to watch Love Them First, Lessons from Lucy Lainey Elementary. The film shows how a principal from Minneapolis is dealing with issues in her own school, a school named in honor of Lainey. It's a school that shares a lot of the same.
My name is Jose Lainey. I'm a middle school teacher here at Weaver Middle School. I teach 8th grade math. I also am the great-great-nephew of Lucy Kraft Lainey. I just really want to just make her proud, just the fact that one of her great-great-nephew is a teacher, educator, and I teach math. And I think it's kind of hard to live up to her because she has done so much. And if you ever have time, just look at all the things she's done. It's like page after page. I'm like, wow. And that's my legacy. That's part of me. That's part of my history. So with me, I like just try to be myself and just be the best educator that I can be because I don't think I can ever probably live up to her expectations of Lucy Kraft Lainey.
I am Michael Gray, the great-great-nephew of Lucy Lainey, the great-great-grandson of Reverend David Lainey, that is. We're at the First Presbyterian Church in Macon, Georgia. We're at this location because this is the first church that that Lucy Lainey's father pastored, Reverend David Lainey. He was the first African-American pastor in the city of Macon, at least one of the first African-American pastors in the city of Macon, the first pastor of this church. This is where Lucy Lainey and her sisters and brothers all grew up at. I think that, you know, once you read about Lucy Lainey, as I have, you discover that she believed in excellence. Mary Bethune McLeod, which was actually one of her teachers at the school, she stated that Miss Lucy didn't tarry. And that's an old term, of course, you know, which means she didn't joke. She didn't play around. She told you like it was, how it is, whether you liked it or not. So I think that, you know, she believed in excellence, you know, and I think we need to get back to that. You know, she believed that the students had more in them and could achieve anything.
There you go. They could achieve anything. It's always inside of you, and we need to just bring out what's inside of us, out of us. There's so much in us, in each and every one of us.
Right.
Miss Janet. What do you
I'd like to say about this lovely lady? Well, they called her the mother of the children of the people. That's, like they said, that's written on her tombstone. And I know that I saw a picture, I believe, of the school named after her, and they have that quote on the wall in one of the main hallways of the school. The mother of the children of the people in Macon, Georgia. I like the fact that she could read and write by age 4 and that she knew Latin by age 12. Latin by age 12. We got another Phyllis Wheatley on our hands here.
There you go.
I just, I'm amazed by that. What a great learner. She could, what a brain she had to pick that up and to be able to master Latin itself. I've got a couple extras here that the clips didn't tell us about. You know, Jimmy Carter used to be the governor of Georgia, and he made her one of the first three African Americans honored by having her portrait installed at the Georgia State Capitol. So So you go to the Georgia State
nice.
Capitol, and there's a portrait of Lucy Craft Laney.
Mm-hmm.
She
and you
was
know
also
how Georgia
a Republican.
Is.
Yeah. She was also
oh, she
a Republican.
Was?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, she was born right after, I believe, right after the Civil War. Or, yeah, because she started her school in 1874.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So... that's what she was. She was the seventh of 10 children. And the school that she started with six students. But by the end of the second year, it had 234 students. So the first year they had six. By the end of the second year, it had 234 students. Now, talk
mm-hmm.
about
mm-hmm.
the power of her reputation and her teaching.
Yes.
You know?
And it was only intended for girls. And then the boys
mm.
appeared. And she accepted
right,
them
right.
as students as well. And so, like you say, by the end of the second year, over 200 children were in her school. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
wow. Because people want to
learn. And
you
know
I mean,
she didn't.
You know,
right. Oh, you know she didn't mess around, as one of her great-great-nephews
no,
said. She didn't tarry. She didn't joke around. She didn't put up with that kind of stuff. So I'm
not
sure that when she admitted the boys, she gave them a good talking to at
Ooh,
times.
Wait.
You know,
that
you're going to come here. You're going to, this is the law. This is what's going to happen.
You're going to learn. What'd you say? You're going to
mm-hmm.
learn today.
No messing around. Exactly.
Because I didn't understand what they had said. All I heard was, you didn't, and I didn't know what that next word was, but I thank you for saying it. She
uh-huh.
don't tarry, so okay. Because I tried to listen to a couple times, like, yes,
mm-hmm.
yes. I know what it means.
Well,
I just didn't know what was said.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah,
what a lady. Read and write
wow.
by age
and
four,
all of these,
Latin by age 12.
Yes, and what they said about her on her Latin, what was it? Okay, she said, as you said, Lucy Laney learned to read and write by the age of four, and by the time she was 12, she was able to translate difficult passages in Latin, including
mm.
Julius Caesar's commentaries on the Gallic War. So, you know,
wow,
I can barely speak English. So at the age of 12, when somebody has that in them, that is an accomplishment
mm-hmm.
in itself. That is an accomplishment
mm-hmm.
in itself. So, wow. It's just like all these intelligent and intellectuals, just if I could just be on their shoulder and just listen to how they spoke and how they went through life. But we didn't tarry, though. But, hey, you
mm-hmm.
know, wow. And it also says, after teaching for 10 years in Macon, Savannah, and Milledgeville, and Augusta, she opened her own school in the basement of the Presbyterian Church in 1883.
Mm-hmm.
So then after all this, and you
mm-hmm.
said that she was a student of Bethune?
No, I did not say that.
Oh, okay. Okay, I thought you said that she had something to do with Bethune, though, didn't she?
No, I didn't say
anything
like that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You didn't tarry on that one, huh?
No. I'm not tarrying right now.
You're not tarrying right now?
That's a lie.
So funny.
That's
so,
a lie.
That's
here we are cutting up and goofing around. Here we are. And Lucy Craft Laney is looking down from heaven going, what are we going to do here?
That. I ain't having that.
I know.
I ain't having that. That's hilarious.
They're talking about
That's
me.
So
and
funny.
They're talking about me and they're
tarrying
all over the place.
Only we can tarry. We're the only ones who could tarry. Tarry one and tarry two.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, and they talk about, what do you say, decades later. So centuries later, excuse
mm-hmm.
me, inspiring people centuries later. So the people who she inspired are probably her grands
and great grands and so on and so forth. But, I mean, as you talk about her, she should inspire all of us. I mean, 4 years old and then 12 years old, those two numbers is like, you know, that's a lot. That is a lot. That is a lot to achieve in that short time frame. But I have to say something about this one young man. I can't remember his name, but he's 12, and I heard this on the Today Show. He graduated from high school and college.
And college.
At the age of 12. Yes. Did you hear about him?
I heard
this
about
him yesterday.
Yeah.
Young,
not much.
Yes, this young man. I of course you know me how I'm always googling. But he did
tarrying.
He said he didn't have anything. Yeah, I'm not tarrying. He said since he didn't have anything to do while he was during the COVID, he went ahead and got some more credits. It's like, oh my goodness. You know?
Wow.
But his mother knew that he was going to be something because I think at 3, I think he could write his full name. He could write his full name. His full name at 3. Man.
Do you have his name?
I'm looking at it now. As a young man graduate from high school and college at the age of 12. But yes, he Mike Wimmer. That's right, Mike Wimmer of Salisbury, North Carolina, is just like any other kid, except he graduated from high school and acquired his associate's degree all in 1 year, and he's just 12 years old. Just
goodness,
12 years old. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Does it say what his degree?
Graduate.
What's his degree in? Does it say what kind of degree he got?
I'm looking.
I know it was an associate's degree.
Right. Let's see. I'm just going to read this. Mike Wimmer, except that he graduated from high school and acquired his associate's degree all in 1 year, and he's just 12 years old. Michael graduated as a high school valedictorian with a grade point of 5.45, and will also earn his associate's degree with a 4.0 GPA in May when he graduates from college. Mike is a member of Mensa, which is a high IQ society, and is also a Davidson
and
Young.
That explains it.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a foundation that recognizes and nurtures and supports profoundly intelligent young people. I guess I wish they would have done that to me. But it doesn't say what his degree is in.
Degree.
But I can see him being president. I can see him being very, very, or a lawyer or something like that. But yeah, he said, I'm not just going to sit around, so I might as well take
I'm not
going to
tarry.
Right? That's what he said. You know, that's why I had to bring him up. He's got this plaque that I'm looking at. It's in recognition of Michael T. Wimmer. He's a certified member of American Mensa. And what is Mensa? You know what Mensa is?
I know the organization. I don't know what it stands for, the Mensa itself.
Okay.
I don't know if that's
an
acronym or. I know. You're going to Google
Mensa.
It. Right?
You know what I am.
Yeah.
You know I am.
Yeah.
Let's see. According to American Mensa LTD, the word Mensa has several meanings, mind, table, and month. Let me go back here. Mensa. Oh, darn. I told you today is not a good day. Today's not a good day.
We're getting through it, though.
Mensa.
Yeah.
Yes, we are. And I appreciate you just hanging out with me and saying, it's going to be okay.
It is. It's going to be okay.
Mensa's requirement for membership is at or above the 98th percentile on certain standardized IQs. But it doesn't say it. I want to say probably.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to find it. You know me. Okay, here we go.
I know.
You said, I know. Mensa. You know. But it doesn't say what it stands for. It doesn't say.
Maybe it's just the name. Maybe it's just the name.
And that's what I'm thinking because of what it means. Gifted youth, the foundation. Because you know you have STEM, which is like science and something and something and something and something. We had this other thing called, you know, it was science, science, arithmetic, something else and something else. But I can't even think of right now because they've changed it so many times. But it was called like, it was kind of like STEM, but it was meant something else. And I just wish I knew, remember what it was. Because it was like star or that type of thing. But I think Mensa is it doesn't even give us what the term means, and I don't like that. That's not nice. They're keeping us in suspense. I hate when that happens. And of course things, you know, that we have these crazy pop ups that don't allow us to do anything else. But just keep the pop-ups. But it was, what was it? It was, when I think about it, I'll think about it. But, I mean, it was just for the smart. It was basically for women because women were never looked at for those things like the hidden figures women. You know, science and arithmetic and technology, all those things. It's like, you know. They never gave us credit for what we, you know, where we had credit, which was due. And so, of course, they, if I could think of it. So we can move on. We can move on to the next thing. So,
okay.
But yes, if I can all find right. Mensa during the next clip, I'll find
segment.
It. But yes, this is really interesting. I'm trying to think of what the name of that program was. Oh, mercy. Of course, you know. Nothing ever comes to you. I might need to take me some Mensa classes or something.
Isn't that
and true? Test my IQ.
Because
it says take the Mensa admission test. So, but we want to go on to our next, let's see, craft laning. We have another quick commercial, and then we can come back with our next person of interest.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you are shopping at doitallinthemall.com. Why? Because a percentage of the proceeds will go back into our communities and help redevelop those same communities, making our lives better. Women and men have been coming together by shopping to make a difference in our communities. And won't you join us today? Again, shop doitallinthemall.com.
All right. And so who is next on our agenda today, Ms. Schwartz?
Her name is Charlotte Hawkins Brown, and she was another educator that we're going to see is pretty interesting when she moved to the South. She started out in the North, and then she moved to the South, and the story of how she got there is pretty interesting, but the first clip is called Charlotte Hawkins Brown Should Never Be Forgotten. The second one is about she has a museum, or they made a museum of her, representing her. And the second clip is the museum staff talking about the museum of Charlotte Hawkins Brown. So if you would please, Ms. Inez, go ahead and play both clips.
Yes, ma'am. And I shall. And anybody out there who would like to join us on the conversation, it's 845-241-9985. I keep forgetting to do that on this show. Again, it's 845-241-9985. Charlotte Hawkins Brown Should Never Be Forgotten on the show today, Education for Those Who Seek.
But 18-year-old Charlotte Hawkins Brown was one young woman who refused to accept this way of life. Jim Crow was a challenge to be overcome, not an obstacle to prevent her from fulfilling her mission.
I sit in the Jim Crow car, but my mind is rejuvenated to strive harder, to build a race that will someday rise in majesty and break down every wall of segregation in American life. Charlotte Hawkins Brown.
Leaving Massachusetts, where she had been educated, she returned to her home state of North Carolina to teach.
When Charlotte Hawkins got off the train, there was no station, so she had no idea where she was. It was in the middle of the woods. So I think it was a little fear. You know, this is not New England. I'm in a different place. Where am I? I'm in this state. I have no idea. I don't remember. Yes, it's my home state, but where do I go from here? I think she adjusted well.
In 1901, she converted an old blacksmith shed into a schoolhouse and opened the Alice Freeman Palmer Memorial Institute. For the next two decades, she struggled to raise money to build her school into an outstanding educational institution. Because white donors were reluctant to support a school that developed minds rather than domestic skills, Brown had to use subterfuge.
When Brown begins teaching there, she has to say that she has a vocational school.
I think the reason that whites wanted African Americans to continue the agriculture and domestic skills was it kept them at a certain level. I mean, it did not give them the education to, you know, inspire them to do more.
Her teachers said that you would pretend to have a vocational school on the outside, and then you would go in your classroom and teach them French or Latin or anything that you knew.
As people said, she had highfalutin ideas and high aims for her students. And she was teaching the 3 R's, but she was also intent on teaching them leadership qualities.
During the early years, in order to raise money for the school, Dr. Brown had to come up with some type of fundraising solution. And she came up with letter writing, writing to all of the Northerners, telling them what they've learned at the school, what they were doing, writing and requesting support, anything. I mean, anything that they could give at that time.
Dear Mrs. Worth, I have worried your patience, no doubt, but I have delivered the message of my soul to you. It is not the message of an individual, but the cry of a struggling race. Please make all checks payable to the treasurer, Charlotte Hawkins Brown.
I am sending you $10 for your school, which I hope will be put to good use. I advise you to instruct your girls to be virtuous, for moral looseness is an unfortunate quality of many young women of your race.
Her life was a balancing act. Her life was an act of trying to appease white people, white liberals who would give the school money and who would try to help the school in other ways. And then on the other hand, to try to work in an African-American freedom struggle that she clearly saw is ongoing, that she clearly saw herself as part of.
She fought fights that people didn't usually fight in those days. They just went along with the system. But I think that if at any time she could go against the system, that's what Dr. Brown did. She took them to the movie theater where she would have special showings so they didn't have to sit up in the balcony.
She was, of course, as we always said, a woman ahead of her time. She was smart enough to use every opportunity to develop the students. Yes, she always taught us that you can be as good as anybody else, regardless of what your color is. She taught us that, and we appreciated that. Because, you know, you go around thinking that you can't do this and you can't that, you will never be nothing or something like that. She made it, told us it wasn't true. We could be anything we wanted to be.
Recognizing the need of a cultural approach to life, I have devoted my life to establishing for Negro youth something superior to Jim Crowism. Sometimes the prejudice is so great, I feel that I can't stand it a day longer. But then I look into the delicate faces of the children and determine to stick it out no matter what the cost. Charlotte Hawkins Brown.
Wonderful. Charlotte Hawkins Brown. Next one is on the museum staff. Continue her legacy.
The chance to get to talk about
this powerhouse of a woman every day is really unique.
Dr. Charlotte Hawkins Brown was born in Hendersonville, but as a young child moved with her mother to Cambridge, Massachusetts, where she got a top-notch education. Educating others became her life's work when she moved back to North Carolina.
And when she moved south, she was coming from an integrated public school situation to a segregated public school situation.
At only 19 years old, Brown started the Palmer Memorial Institute, a private boarding school where she started educating African-American students.
She was also very involved, in addition to running a school. She's also heavily involved in advocacy work.
And she was able to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars in Greensboro and Boston from people both black and white. Her school grew in size and reputation as Brown started traveling to lecture, along the way receiving 6 honorary degrees.
She's very involved in nearly any topic you can think of.
Brown died in 1961. And decades later, in the mid-1980s, Archives and History bought the 40 acres containing the heart of campus. Today, it's the Charlotte Hawkins Brown Museum.
You never know what particular part of the story is going to catch someone's attention and make them want to, like, talk with you more.
The site's run by 3 recent UNCG grads, Lacey Wilson, Leslie Leonard, and Sonia Laney.
We should not underestimate the power of an individual.
There, they give tours virtually nowadays.
You never know what particular part of the story is going to catch someone's attention and make them want to, like, talk with you more.
But they know they've done their job when they see how people react during and after those tours.
And it's almost a call to action, right? Like, they leave with this just incredible feeling of inspiration, and they want to go in and be some sort of catalyst in their own community.
One highlight is the piano that sits in Brown's home. Her niece, Maria Hawkins, was musically gifted, but not as well known as her talented husband, Nat King Cole. The pair would often visit the school, and Cole played that piano.
Something about being able to go in there and dust that piano, right? Even though I have white gloves on and I'm not really touching it, to be able to be that close to a part of something that was a piece of Mr. Nat King Cole is pretty amazing.
The highlight for Sonia is meeting some of the people whose lives were shaped on campus.
Meeting an alumni feels like meeting a celebrity. Like, it's like fangirling over them.
Some saying those years influenced their lives more than many others.
And obviously there were things happening at this school that are just kind of beyond our current understanding.
The lessons learned here, all relevant today.
She was very vocal about her beliefs, and I think that's something that we can still take to heart today.
And after 2020, perhaps more than ever.
Looking at grassroots efforts and connections and commonalities, there's a lot we can learn and a lot that we can take forward in 2021.
Okay. Wonderful. Before we go into depth into Miss Charlotte Hawkins Brown, I have to tell you, one of my listeners who's on the line listening with us, she brought up Mensa, and a reporter, KTLA's Jessica Holmes, got to meet the youngest and newest member of Mensa, a 2-year-old, Cash or Cachet Quest, who has an IQ of 146. Did you hear me?
Wow.
You didn't fall on the ground and bump your head and then wake back up again? A two-year-old.
Goodness.
And Mensa's, she also said to me, Mensa's requirement for membership is a score at or above the 98th percentile on a certain standardized IQ or other approved intelligence tests, such as the standard Binet intelligence scales, and the minimum accepted score on the Stanford Binet is 132, while the for the Cattell or cattle is 148. O-M-bejesus. I think I might be a 10 or 11 or something like that. I don't know.
But I'm a zero.
No, definitely not a zero. Maybe a minus 2, but not a zero.
Oh,
Mensa has members of... not you, me. Me. Mensa has members of all ages in more than 100 countries around the world. The society provides its members with diverse and exciting opportunities for social, cultural, and intellectual interaction. So, I mean, it's just...
people all over just intelligent. So they're among us, as they say. But go ahead and as you were with Miss Charlotte Hawkins Brown. Thank you, Rhonda. I have to tell her thank you.
Okay. Well, I mean, you picture this. She was educated in the North, and then she wanted to go south to start this school, and the train lets her off in the middle of the woods.
Yes.
And I wonder how she got to where she was going. She obviously had to take her luggage and walk somewhere, and I wish we would have found out or heard the story of how she got to where she was going. But anyway, when she started the school, she had to say it was a vocational school because, as it mentioned, white people didn't want her to develop the minds of these women that she was educating. She would rather, they wanted her to keep them at the vocational level so that they were still below the standing of the white people of that day. But she got around it. She did say that it was a vocational school, but she went ahead and taught the girls also other academic endeavors, academic classes. And then her letter writing campaign, to appease the white liberals, I don't know if you heard or not, but one of the letters said, teach your girls to be moral because they've been known, and I forget the terms that she used, the white woman, but, morally loose is how she described some of the black women that are in society. She claimed that they didn't have good morals. So, you look at the times and you think, wow, she had a lot to deal with. She had a lot that was going up against her. She was
and
also
we usually
the
do.
First African. And she ran the school was not only a day school, but it was a boarding school also. And when you think of what goes into that, a boarding school, you have to provide food, you have to provide shelter for all these people. And apparently she must have raised enough money to do that. She's also the first African-American woman named to a national board of the YWCA.
I'm looking at that. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes, yes. She was a key figure among black club women, serving as the president of the North Carolina State Federation of Negro Women's Clubs. And like you said, she also was active in interracial work as a member of the National Board of the Y. And she also worked with other organizations. But she campaigned against lynching and toured as a lecturer. I mean, like you said, she had to have backing her, to help her, as you say, with this boarding school. And, today, how much is $10 going to go? How far is $10 going to go?
Not very far. Not very far.
Mm-hmm. Not at all. But in 1902, she had secured a donation of land, a building, and funds to open the Alice Freeman Palmer Memorial Institute of Sedalia, North Carolina. So it's just, she said, the lady said, what, put the $10 to good use? Is that what she said?
Right, right.
Like, okay.
Something to that effect.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so, she said, above all.
Right. And I'm just wondering, how far did $10 go? That's what I like to find out. Exactly how far does or did $10 go back in that time? That's what I want to know.
Well,
I mean, because you see.
If we could translate it, if we can translate it to how much it's worth now, that's
right.
I mean, you can Google it. You know, $10 in what, 1901 we're talking about? You can Google it. Put down.
Yes.
You can put. You
so
can
how
Google
much?
$10 in 1902. What it's worth today.
Okay. So how much was $5 worth in 1902? How much is a dollar worth today? Okay. Oh, goodness. Converted on a $100 base, $3,105.
Oh.
In 28 cents.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes.
That's how much, $10.
Value of $1,902? Yes. Yes.
Wow.
How much was the dollar was in early 1900s? With five,
uh-huh.
Let's see. $1 in 1900s is prevalent, or equivalent, excuse me, in purchasing power of about $31.79 today, an increase of $30.79 over 121 years. The dollar had an average inflation rate of 2.90 per year between 1900 and today. So, producing a cumulative price increase of $3,079.21%.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
$3,000. Whoa.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say is whoa.
You can purchase a lot
live back
for
then.
That.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Can you
so there
I mean,
you
this
have
the
it.
Way we they had to live. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You don't realize I won't say how good we have it, but how good we have it today.
Well, we
but
do.
Still, in compares, we don't have no $3,000 per the dollar, you know, the dollar amount, but
Right.
Wow.
Right.
So education. I'm just flabbergasted. Yes. Yes. And they were all educators. They were all educators that you brought to us today, and we learned a lot about what they did. And I caught the little circle because. You know, Madam C.J. Walker, who was born Sarah Breedlove, which I did not know, had Booker T. help her, and then had the gentleman, Mr. Bortner, can't even say his name, build her mansion.
Bortner.
So it's just Bortner, thank you, Bortner, build her mansion. So it's just like the people who you brought today, it's just that circle of people.
Yes.
Their worth
yeah.
and what they gave us, you know, is like, man, this
right.
man, this. Thank you guys for, you know, giving us your mind, your talent, your education, and for the young people who, at 4 years old, did what she did to 12 years old, doing the Latin. Now equating her to the young man, Mr. Michael, I'm going to call him Mr. Mike Wimmer, who graduates high school and college with a degree. Man. So how would you do yourself back then, Janet?
I have no idea except I love to learn. I probably would have begged one of these people to let me into their school, to their schools, because I just love to learn. And that's what I would do, I think. Go find one of these schools and beg to be allowed to come to it if they'd have me. And there goes the bird in the background.
That's okay. Hey, it's part of nature. It doesn't bother me.
Yep.
It does not bother
me.
It doesn't bother me at all because, I mean, because you as being a, you know, a white person compared to a black person probably could afford a lot more than the black person could. So would you want to go to a black school or would you want to go to a white school? Or would you want to go where you could afford to go?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it would have depended upon where I was, where I grew up. And I don't know that a white person would have, you know, a white person at my level of living would have known about these black schools. I'm not sure. I mean, we didn't have social media. Okay. We didn't have television to tell us all about these schools. And so I don't know. I mean, I would have loved to be one of the students of any of these women that we talked about today. You know?
Right.
Yeah. So,
or you could have been one of the donors of somebody giving them money.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
You don't know what your role would have been. You could have been one of those people who helped us get to the point to where we are today because of the type of person you are. Yeah. You know, you don't want to see anybody straggling or, you know, nobody without. So I could see you as one of those people who would donate. You know, if you were, I won't say well-to-do, but at least, you know, if you were able to give, I think you would give. That's how I would see you.
Yeah, I think I would, sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what we got.
That's how I can see you. Today. Well, thank you. We learned a lot. Hey, I like the bird in the background. Hey, I'm a nature person, so the bird doesn't bother me. We learned education on how many people did we learn today? We learned about Madam CJ, who is a Sarah Breedlove, Bertner Woodson Tandy, who was the architecture who built Madam CJ's mansion, which I looked at and was huge. Mary McLeod Bethune, who just was an educator in her own right. And then Lucy Craft Laney and Charlotte Hawkins Brown, who we don't want to ever forget. We don't want to ever forget about anybody. That's why we have history. That's why we have you. Mm-hmm. Coming forth, giving us this education, because I heard about two people, Bethune and Walker, that's it, you know, but it takes everybody, you know, and he was the Alpha Phi Alpha, he was the one who created the pen and
started,
you know, one of the seven jewels, so this education for those who seek, for those who are looking. And that's what Miss Janet does. She educates us every week, and we thank her and appreciate her taking the time to dive deep into history and what do you call it, African, what is it, Many Rivers to Cross. Have you finished the book yet?
Not yet. I'm getting close. I love the book.
Good. And I just appreciate her taking the time out of her days just to educate us as people. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, it doesn't matter, Indian, of Native American descent, that we have this background and knowing where our roots can't come from, because we are basically joined at the hip. People just don't know that. They just don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go.
Okay.
We do not own the rights to any information or music you hear at Let's Do It Radio.
And do you have any last words for us today, Miss Janet?
I just had a lot of
fun. If you're nasty.
Excuse me. I just had a lot of fun tonight. I enjoyed.
Good.
I learned just as much as everybody else does. The book is called African Americans, Many Rivers to Cross, and PBS made a series out of it. So when I finish the book, I'm going to watch the series. But as Sergeant Park said, he's the one who told me about the book, and he says, I wish every person had this book. And I feel the same way. As I read it, It's just so much history, so much African American history in there that I really do. I hope that in the future when Black history is taught more and more in schools that they refer to this book, The African Americans, Many Rivers to Cross. So that's it for
me
tonight.
And talking about Black history, Juneteenth is coming up, and we will probably, well, I know I'll be, quote, unquote, on vacation, so we will probably replay what you had done, I think, last year, I think. I don't remember. I wasn't here when it happened. So for those of you who are out there listening, listen for Juneteenth when Miss Janet Schwartz teaches us about Juneteenth and everything like that. And I haven't heard it, but I may listen to it prior to so I can be at least equipped with information as to Juneteenth and how it came to be. So as we go about our day, school is almost about to be out. We have about 5 minutes, so we're going to give that 5 minute warning bell for school's out. And school is out. Thank you, teacher. We will meet you in homeroom in 2 weeks. Do we know what we're going to be talking about in 2 weeks, Miss Janet?
Well, one of the things, we have a few people lined up that we're going to talk about. But one of the things that we are going to talk about is the history of interracial marriage.
Ooh,
so that,
okay.
that should
okay.
be a good discussion.
Yep. Okay, I'm ready for that one. I am so I'm ready. I'm ready for every time you class is in session. I am so ready. So
thank you. Sure.
No, thank
You're
you.
You're welcome.
You just don't understand because if it wasn't for people taking the time out for us to learn, we would just be wandering around aimlessly. You know, we would be tarrying
tarrying.
Yes, we would be tarrying, so we don't want to tarry. So thank you so much. And as we, I'll play some music after, you know, we close. But you have been listening to Let's Do It Radio, sponsored by doitallinthemall.com, as well as all of our past shows and episodes you can hear on demand. And thank you, Ms. Janet Schwartz, our historian, for keeping history alive and on the topic of education for those who seek. Ms. Janet brings the reality to us front and center to Let's Do It Radio listeners worldwide on history. And I can't wait for her to finish Many Rivers to Cross because she's going to really give it to us. And we are still keeping history alive as a part of our future. We have to become advocates and activists by taking our future into our own hands. I enjoy what Miss Janet has every time she brings, and the manner she brings it is always entertaining, and it's always succinct and in kind of like a chronological order. It seems like the circle of learning continues. A big shout out to those Do It All in the Mall listeners worldwide who are supporting Let's Do It Radio. And every time we have a Keeping History Alive episode, I learn something new every time. It doesn't matter. And if you miss an episode or want to hear an episode or share an episode, you can do so by going to the homepage of doitallinthemall.com and go to the Let's Do It Radio banner, which is on the right-hand side, and you can check out all of our past episodes on demand. So thank you, thank you, thank you, Miss Janet. Do It All in the Mall is a secure 24/7 online shopping mall, which you can shop safely and securely, providing over 5,000 of your favorite stores, as well as stores you may not be familiar with. So visit, take a tour, and shop for anything you need while listening to entertainment wherever you may be, and make Do It All in the Mall your shopping headquarters for all seasons and for all reasons. We can't be successful without all of you shopping, so please shop and support us. Donations are also welcome, and you can do that by clicking the donate button on the homepage of course, doitallinthemall.com. Contact us if you want to be on Let's Do It Radio. Maybe you have a topic for discussion, or maybe you want to advertise your business, and you can do that by sending us an email to doitallinthemall@yahoo.com, or you can complete the contact us information on the homepage of doitallinthemall.com as well. The old-fashioned way works too. You can pick up your phone, your cell phone, or your landline and call us at 509-406-6920 or 813-900-7911. But we also want you to go to the homepage and hit the subscribe button or follow us at Let's Do It Radio, and then you will be alerted for any time we have an episode or any time we have a show. So please go ahead and do that, and you'll be on our contact list. So please Skype, tune in, listen, or talk with us at 845-241-9985, Tuesdays through Fridays, and you can listen in on Sundays, as you heard tonight, with our Education for Those Who Seek with retired teacher Janet Schwartz, and Keeping History Alive at 3 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Central, and 6 p.m. Eastern. That's on Tuesdays. And she alternates with Dr. Ralph Steele, who is a structured settlement broker on Think Wealth. And he is at 3 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Central, and 6 p.m. Eastern as well. And on Wednesdays, we have Teaching from the Bible, which is Bible study normally, with Reverends Carolyn and Rodney McCullough at 3 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Central, and 6 p.m. Eastern. And they alternate with Miss Stephanie Lott Whitfield on Why Does Love Hurt? And her times are a little bit different, and that's 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Eastern. Thursdays, we have Hanging Out with Sergeant Parks, and he keeps it real. 3 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Eastern. And we alternate Fridays. And this weekend, we have Late Night with Lee Alston with Soul of Soul Music. And he is internationally known and a talented musician. And he plays soul, jazz, spiritual, spoken word, inspirational, spiritual, gospel, anything, you name it, he can claim it. And that's 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Eastern. And that is Late Night with Lee Alston. So please join us this week with Lee Alston. And he alternates with Perry Whaley, Vitiligo Man of Action. And Vitiligo is celebrating this month with Vitiligo World Day, and they are going virtual, and it's Bloomington, Minnesota, and that is June 25th through the 27th, and the June 25th is the day they celebrated or started celebrating, because that is the day that Michael Jackson passed away, which he had vitiligo, and that's why he turned from his colors, because it is a disorder, dis-ease, and they now celebrate June as World Vitiligo Day, and you can go to their website, and it's www.2021wvdworldvitiligodayusa.org, or if you type in World Vitiligo Day, you can also come up with the website as well. And his time is 3 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Central, and 6 p.m. Eastern. Sundays, of course, we have our guest speakers. First Sunday is Reverend Carolyn McCullough, who did a wonderful job on Thank You, Jesus, for the Blood this past week. Second Sunday is Dr. Ralph Steele. Third Sunday is Reverend Carolyn Williamson. Fourth Sunday is Reverend Ronnie Marshall. And fifth Sunday is Reverend Heather Lynn Andrews-Watkins. And their time is 3 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Eastern. So please, please, please spread the word. with everyone you know on social media, telephone, cell phone, anyway, spread the word. The bigger the crowd, the broader the spectrum. And we want to thank you for listening to Let's Do It Radio. Do it all in the mall.com. And this has been your hostess for the evening, broadcasting to you worldwide. And I am Miss Inez, owner and fashion designer of On Ice Valcour Designs, where myself and all of our entrepreneurs who I mentioned earlier can be found on the homepage of none other than Do It All in the Mall under the client section of So knowledge is power, and as we fight to gain knowledge, we have to get it the best way we know how. Through college, School of Hard Knocks, as you hear in the background, it's a hard knock life, of course, and we got to get it through older generations, internet, Google, through the street life, front porch, back porch, on the nightlight, through candles, history books, libraries. No matter how you get it, what we want you to get is get an understanding. And so do better for yourself and for those coming up under you, behind you, and around you. You can educate yourself as well as others. Give a man a fish and you feed him for a day. Teach him to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. Proverbs 9. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. In 2 weeks, Miss Janet will be with us for more Keeping History Alive. And I want to close out this portion of this song that I used to love, To Sir With Love, as we, as Lulu sings To Sir With Love. So please, please, please be safe and just do it, do it, do it all in the mall. Whatever you do, just do it all in the mall. To Sir With Love, Lulu. Yes, sir. And as I talked about earlier, street life, that's how sometimes we have to learn through the street life.
Play the street light.
And after living that street life, who wants to become a millionaire? You know, living that street life, you could, but you got to live the right life. Music Soul Child, Millionaire.
Money, 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 money. In the world that's gonna be for that deep.
You may have to go through, like I said, a hard knock life to get to that money for the love of it, to gather it, to get it for the generational wealth. But hey, Jay-Z, hard knock life.
It's the hard knock life. It's the hard knock life. It's the hard knock life.
Take the bass line out. Uh-huh. Here we go.
Bounce.
Let it bump. Down. Driving some of the hottest cars New Yorkers ever seen. But dropping some of the hottest verses rappers ever heard. From the dope spot with the smoke block singing the murder scene. You know me well from nightmares of a lonely cell. My only hell was since when y'all know me to fail. Nah, we all my with the rubber grip or shots. And if you with me, mama, rubber your and whatnot. I'm from the school of the hard knock. We must not let outsiders violate our block. And my plot is sick of the world and split it 50-50. Let's take the dough and stay real jiggy. Let's sip the Chris and get pissy-pissy. Flow infinitely like the memory of my Biggie. Baby, you know it's hell when I come through. The life and times of Sean Carter in Volume 2. Locked down in a 10x4, controlling the house. We live in hard knocks. We don't take over, we ball blocks. Burn them down and you can have it back, daddy. I'd rather that. I float for chicks wishing they ain't have to strip to pay tuition. I see your vision, mama. I put my money on the long shots. All my ballers that's born the clock. No one will be on top, whether I perform or not. I went from lukewarm to hot. Sleeping on futons and cots. The king size, green machines, the green fives, the scene pies. Let the thing between my eyes analyze life's ills. Then I put it down tight grill. I'm tight grill with the phony rappers. Y'all might feel we homies. I'm like still, y'all don't know me. I'm tight grill. When my situation ain't improving, I'm trying to murder everything moving. Feel me? Gotta eat, stay on my toes. Got a lot of beef, so logically, I pray on my foes. Hustling still inside of me. And as far as progress, you'd be hard-pressed to find another rapper hot as me. I gave you prophecy on my first joint, and y'all all lamed out. Didn't really appreciate it till the second one came out. So I stretched the game out, extra name out, put Jigger on top, and drop albums non-stop for you, nigga.
Hard knock life, but after you go through that hard knock life, you're going to have a better tomorrow. Better tomorrow for you and a better tomorrow for me.
Mm-hmm.
going to have stuff like that Friday tomorrow for you and me. Yes. I want to do stuff like that, but I want to do it in a secret garden.
Tell me a secret. I don't just want to know about any secret of yours. I want to know about one special secret. Tonight I want to learn all about the secrets in your garden.
I wanna read your mind, know your deepest feelings. I wanna make it right for you, baby. Show
Lord Jesus, we ask you to help us to understand and strengthen us to provide for ourselves and our communities by working together. It takes each and every one of us to come together as the kings and queens that we are and have always been. Thank you.
Yes, y'all. This is Gullah Soul Radio, the Soulistic Music Revival, coming right at you. Hip hop, soul music, yeah, on the strength. I say it's on the strength right now. This is Gullah Soul Music.
We do not own the rights to any information or music you hear at Let's Do It Radio.